마다 마다 봐 군샤비 하리. 고피 전발라바 기리바라다리. 고피 전발라바 기리바라다리. 야소다 난다나 브라자자나 란자나 야소다 난다나 브라자자나 란자나 자무나티라 바나차리. 자무나티라 바나차리. 자요 라다 마다바 군샤비하리. 자옴 비슈누팟 파라마항사 파리브라자가차리아 아슈타르샤타 스리시마드 바파이 차르나라빈다 박티베단타 고스와미 스리라 프라부팟 키 차이 스리 차이타냐 차르타므리타 키 차이. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. This is Tarun's. Okay. I don't know where he went. All right. Get him. Thank you.
Today is the birthday of...
Here, you want to use this? Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. How old is she? How many? Eight? Eight. Okay. So the little story about the Ramanuja Brahmins visiting Prabhupada, I was just talking with someone who was brought up in the Ramanuja family and came to America, wasn't really interested, and now, because he's met devotees, he's super interested in his culture, and we had a long talk, and he really appreciates everything about Prabhupada. And I told him the story how whenever I go to a Hindu temple, most of the pujaris there are trained in the Ramanuja Sri Vaishnav tradition. And if you want to win an instant friend, you recite, Om Tat Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Surayo Divivachakshiratatam. It's from the Rig Veda. And immediately, you're like tight friends. It's like when somebody comes up to you and says, Hari Bol, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, just out of the blue, like, whoa, who are you? I just met some Hare Krishna people at the Rainbow Gathering or at Krishna Lunch, and they told me to say that. And so you're in there. So if you know that shloka, if you're visiting a Hindu temple, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Surayo Divivichakshara Tatam, and then they'll finish it with you. Tad Viprasho Vipanyavo Jagrivangsha Samindate Vishnu Yat Paramam Padam. So I was also talking with a pujari, Ramanujacharya, Pujari, and we had a long talk because we were on a long drive together. And he asked me, have you ever seen your Prabhupada? And I said, yeah, I was really young, but I didn't really understand much. And I did get to see him. And immediately, that Pujari's face just changed. He was like, I would give anything to see my Acharya, meaning Ramanujacharya. And this is like 1,000 years later. People still see him as the Acharya. And I thought, well, this looks very hopeful. And Prabhupada is, I mean, of course we're biased, but even from an objective point of view, seeing what Prabhupada has done and talking with these Ramanuja people, I just say, you know, am I biased by saying this? And they say, no, actually what he's done, he's even surpassed Ramanujacharya by coming and spreading this all over the world. It is really big. We just went to Boston to observe the 60th anniversary of his arriving in the harbor. We were floating around in a boat with I don't know how many hundreds of devotees talking about Prabhupada, looking out at the Boston Harbor and thinking about his arrival there. And I've been studying it for the last few months and the last 50 years, the story. And I was thinking how ever since Prabhupada met his guru and he got who planted the idea in his head, you speak English, you're educated, speak to the English-speaking people. He didn't really tell them, go to America, write all of these books. But Prabhupada took that as part of the instruction. He just said, this is what he wants, this is how I'm going to do it. I'm just going to go about it. I'm going to throw everything I can into it. And every step of the way, there were tremendous obstacles placed before him. I was thinking how I used to hike a lot. I would still like to, up in the mountains. In North Carolina, you get up on one mountain range and you look out and you can see at least a dozen mountain ranges, and I was thinking like, wow, if I had to walk across all of that, go up over that mountain, down the valley, go up over the next mountain, that's kind of like what Prabhupada had been through. He went through, in his words, he said, with great difficulty, I obtained my P form to be able to come to America. It was a lot of trouble. With great difficulty, I published the Srimad Bhagavatam. For him to write it, that was no big deal. He made an estimate. I could write one volume every month if I had the support, people doing the editing, the printing, the fundraising. He could write a book every month. That's amazing. He was writing, went to the publisher. Publisher could only print up to a 12-point type. Only went up to 10-point type. He wanted 12-point. He said, that's too small. I want it bigger. So then he went to extra trouble going to a different printer. He got it published. It says right there on the first volume, published in 12-point type. He wanted that, and he wanted that size of a book. He was really specific about it. So with great difficulty, he published that book, went around selling it. It went pretty quick initially, and then it was really hard to keep on selling those books because the market was so small. At one point, he said, we are creating a market for these books. So with great difficulty, he published the second volume. Even while he was still working on the first one, then he got the third one. Anyway, there was just so many obstacles placed in his way. And I was thinking when he came to America, like you're crossing over all of these mountains. Okay, there's a mountain. I got to get over that. And you climb over it. And it's kind of fun getting over certain obstacles, climbing over mountains. earlier this year, I went to Pokhara, Nepal, and I got to see the Himalayan mountains for the first time. And we went up to the place where you could view it. It was still from in town, and it was a cloudy day, and then the clouds parted, and you could see the mountain range and all of the other tourists that were up there. You could hear everyone gasp all of a sudden when the clouds parted. They were like, wow, that is really big. And I was thinking, that must have been what it was like for Prabhupada when he came to America. And he landed in Boston, and he walked around, and he realized, what am I trying to do? And he writes that song, that prayer. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why you brought me here. And I can't do this, but I know you can do it. And so I know I'm going to be able to do it because you can empower me. So please let me do this. So seeing America, that must have been like, you know, I've crossed over mountains. I looked at that and I was like, there's no way I could. There's no way you could walk over the Himalayan mountains. I mean, people try to get up to Mount Everest, and how many people have died there? And it takes special equipment. You need a whole team. You need funding. You need all kinds of stuff. But Prabhupada was all alone. He was writing back to India, I need some help. This guy was willing to help, but government of India wouldn't allow the money to come. He had some billionaire guy that was ready to give him the funds to build a temple in New York, but government of India wouldn't allow. Prabhupada was desperately writing to all of his friends, anyone he could think of, can you manage this? Can you help this go through? So there are all these other obstacles that finally they didn't pan out. So he realized, I've got to just do this on my own. And a few of the least likely people came and helped him. And all the other swamis, they were speaking, whatever you call it. They were talking to the wealthy people in uptown New York. And that was one of the things that Mukunda Maharaj said when he saw Prabhupada for the first time. He heard him speak, and he thought, this guy clearly knows what he's talking about, and he has these books. He's definitely a scholar. And just everything about him was aristocratic. Like, this is a very cultured and refined person. Why is he here in the Bowery living in poverty like this? Why isn't anybody helping him? All the other swamis he went to, they were in wealthy places, funded by rich people, but they didn't have much depth to them. But here's this person that's obviously got the genuine article, but he's got that's all he's got. He's got no other resources. It's like you see some barefoot guy walking up, you got your whole expedition going up to the Himalayas and your air tanks and your special tents and your Sherpas carrying all your stuff. Then you see some guy walking barefoot up there like, what? How's he doing that? And so this is amazing that we have all of these books. We're reading Chaitanya Charitamrita. He did it. He's established this whole culture here. And so now we are going to read from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when you read the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita, you go all the way through and to the very end, you read that last bit that Prabhupada put in there. He said, on my first meeting with my spiritual master in 1922, he said, you should try to give the message of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking world. And so in some words, he's saying, I've done it. Here, I've completed the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. I've carried out the orders of my guru. Here it is. By his grace, by his mercy, he never although he's doing all of this, he never like says, look what I'm doing. He's just saying, look what Krishna is doing through me. Look what my guru is doing through me. And that's the only way you can get anything done. If you take proprietorship, Krishna just like, okay, it's all yours. Go ahead. Let's see how far you can get. As soon as you say, I'm doing it, then Krishna's like, you're doing it. Go ahead. But if you always have that mentality, it's Krishna working through me, then that pipeline of Krishna's mercy just expands and gets bigger and bigger, and so much starts flowing through you that you flood the whole world. So that takes level of humility and realization. All right, so here we go. We are reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 22, text 160. This is a conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Sanatan Goswami. Lord Chaitanya is speaking to him. This whole chapter is about Abhideya. We're almost at the end of the chapter. Next week, we're going to finish it. Bahushira will finish it. We're old friends. Actually, if you read the letters, Bahushira and my wife Mahara were sitting in the same initiation together in New York back in what year? 1973. Bahushira, Mahara, Atendriya. Who else?
Henry Street.
So yeah, we got history, all of this history. There's drama, there's rasa, there's relationships, and that's what makes it all so sweet. Okay. And here, there's just so much backstory in all of this, the story of Sanatan Goswami meeting Lord Chaitanya, and asking his questions that Prabhupada brings up so many times. I never learned the verse just by hearing Prabhupada saying it so many times. Ke ami, ke something. Anybody know? Who am I? Why am I suffering? That's pretty much it. I think I'm such a great scholar, but I don't even know who I am. Please tell me who I am and what is the purpose of life and how do I achieve it? So that's how he started the conversation. And this conversation spans at least three great big chapters. This one is about Abhideya, and I don't know how far to go with how deep on all of these different terms. I'm just going to run right into the verse, which is a quotation from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So text 160, Krishnam smaran janam chasya prishtam nija samihitam tat tat katha ratashchaso kuryad vasam raje sada. Okay, here's the translation from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, chapter 1, 2, 294. So what's that first number? How far does that go? Anybody know? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. I have a copy of it here. I try reading it once in a while, and it just gets so deep. And he just goes into so much detail about Krishna, your relationships with Krishna, and then there's this kind, and then there's this kind, and these kind of people that follow this kind, or this, like this, and it's so detailed. After a while, you can just feel like, oh, I don't need to know all of these details. This is too much. But one thing you can get from it is, if there's so much detail about this, the author clearly must know what he's talking about. Otherwise, how could he be so detailed about it? There must be something to this. And Prabhupada, from reading this book, I'm just seeing how Prabhupada summarized it within the Nectar of Devotion, and again, his genius in simplifying it, and then taking these complicated Sanskrit terms and then putting English words to them. And when the Nectar of Devotion came out, there is a recording of the lecture he gave. He said, "Now we have this book, this very important book, Nectar of Devotion. I want all of my disciples to read it." When did it come out? It was like 1970. It was really early on. He said, "I want all of my disciples to read it, and if you have any questions, I want you to read it again. Don't come to me asking, 'Prabhupada, what is this?' And if you still don't understand it, read it again, and then you can come to me with your questions." He said emphatically, "This is a really important book. I want all of you to read this." So this is just like, how did he do that? In the middle of translating Srimad Bhagavatam, he takes a month or two off, writes this brilliant commentary on the Nectar of Devotion, and then goes back into, and then he also took some time out to write the Krishna book. If he had help before, we would have had the whole Bhagavatam done. All right, so here we go. I read the Sanskrit, Krishnam Smaran Janam Chasya. I'll get back to that. We'll read the translation. "Now, the devotee should always think of Krishna within himself, and one should choose a very dear devotee who is a servitor of Krishna in Vrindavan. One should constantly engage in topics about that servitor and his loving relationship to Krishna, and one should live in Vrindavan. However, if one is physically unable to go to Vrindavan, he should mentally live there." All right, there's a lot in that. I'll read it again. "The devotee should always think of Krishna within himself, and one should choose a very dear devotee who is a servitor of Krishna in Vrindavan." So this is in the chapter. This chapter is talking about Abhideya. The first subject matter is, let's see how many are paying attention, Sambandha, which means relationship, understanding who we are and what our relationship is. Okay, we're going way back. I'll be super impressed. This must have been like 10 years ago when, at the pace we're going at. How did Lord Chaitanya introduce the idea of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana? He told a story about an astrologer. Anybody remember? Okay, there was a man who was very poor, and he met an astrologer, and the astrologer said, "You're not poor. You have a very wealthy relative who has left you a great treasure." So that is like Sambandha, finding out that you're not poor. Okay, so that's the first step, understanding we're not alone. Krishna is here, and I've got some things picked out. I think this might be the time to read these. This is stuff that we just came across in our regular reading. And it's, let's see. Okay, we're in the seventh canto, chapter 13. I'll skip the verse and just jump right into the purport. "When the living entity is in his original spiritual form, he is happy by nature. There is no question of miseries for the spiritual being." All right. So when you read that, it's like, what are you talking about? I'm experiencing all kinds of miseries. I'll read it again. "When the living entity is in his original spiritual form, he is happy by nature. There is no question of miseries for the spiritual being." So our real position is to be like that. Then he goes on, "Because every one of us is a part of Krishna, we have a very affectionate relationship with him. But because we have forgotten our identities and are considering the body to be the self, we are afflicted by all the troubles of birth, death, old age, and disease. this misconception in materialistic life continues unless and until one comes to understand his relationship with Krishna, Sambandha. The happiness sought by the conditioned soul is certainly only illusion, as explained in the next verse. And the next verse talks about mriga trishnam. Mriga means an animal, a deer. Trishna means thirsty. And that word mriga trishnam is translated as a mirage. Just as a deer, because of ignorance, cannot see the water within a well covered by grass, but runs after water elsewhere, the living entity, covered by the material body, does not see the happiness within himself, but runs after happiness in the material world. Okay, so when Sambandha is clearly established, then we know we have a relationship with Krishna. There's no question of misery for the living entity. Because we have this deep, affectionate relation with Krishna, because we are part and parcel of Krishna, we have a deep relationship with him. But like a deer running after a mirage of water, we're chasing after the wrong things. So rather turn that inward, and that is what the second stage is of avideya, the practice of how to reestablish that relationship. The first thing is understanding I have a relationship. Second, how do I make it work? Now we're coming to the very end of the whole presentation where it gets pretty rich, pretty deep. And this is after we've gone through the whole cleansing process, wiping away all of the illusions. Also, what we just read was, how much time? Okay, I think we can do this. This might actually all come together. In the seventh canto, we read a lot about Prahlad, and at the end of the whole presentation, which is in chapter 10, Narada is glorifying Prahlad, and then he considers, Yudhishthira is thinking, I'm nothing, Prahlad is really great, but then Narada says, actually, you're really great, Yudhishthira, Krishna comes to your house, he doesn't even knock on the door, he just walks right in. You guys are like family with him, he is part of your family. You are so close, there's nobody as dear to Krishna as you are. You're even better than Prahlad. And Yudhishthira is like, he just kind of changes the subject. He asks him, can you explain to me that religious system by which everyone can come to the level of being like Prahlad? So Narada Muni starts off by saying there are 30 qualities that everyone should develop. And this is how he introduces the whole Varnashram system. Let's see if I could find that. It's like three or four verses. Starts off with satyam daya tapa shocham titiksha shamo dama titiksha shamo dama. In order that human beings be distinct from the animals, the great Saint Narada recommends that every human being be educated in terms of the above mentioned 30 qualifications. Nowadays there's propaganda. Okay, I'm getting off into another topic, but it's still on topic. This is the beginning stage of Sambandha, developing our good qualities of satyam, truthfulness, daya, mercy, tapa, austerity, shocham, cleanliness, titiksha, tolerance, titiksha, what was iksha? Oh, I think that was to be able to deliberate right from wrong. Shamo, control of the mind, Dhamma, control of the senses, etc., etc. And so there's 30 qualifications, and I'm interested in things like this because now Prabhupada's getting into how governments should be run. Nowadays, there is propaganda everywhere, all over the world, for a secular state, a state interested only in mundane activities. But if the citizens of the state are not educated in the above-mentioned good qualities, how can there be happiness? For example, if the total populace is untruthful, how can the state be happy? Therefore, without consideration of one's belonging to a sectarian religion, everyone should be taught to become truthful. Where was that? These are the general qualifications of a human being. There is no question of a secular state or an ecclesiastical state. Unless one is educated in the above-mentioned 30 qualities, there cannot be any peace. Okay, this is a really shocking statement. Did anyone catch that? There is no question of a secular state or an ecclesiastical state. Anyone catch that? Yes. Yeah. Because that's always the fear. That's why we have freedom of religion. What is it called? Freedom of religion in America. Because of bad experience of an ecclesiastic state. This is the official church of the state. Everyone has to follow this. We can't allow any Hare Krishna people. We can't allow any, you know, whatever. No Buddhists, no Muslims. It only can be no Catholics. It can only be this church and not the Reformed one, not the Latter-day Saints one, but it's got to be just this one. So that would be ecclesiastic. And so it's brilliant how Prabhupada packed all that into that one sentence. There is no question of a secular state or an ecclesiastical state. So he's just saying, these 30 qualities, so if you become a world leader, this is what you need to look at. And that was someone I met in Boston. He's studying at MIT, studying political, world politics and diplomacy. And I said, we need to talk. So I got his phone number. I want to try to compile as many instructions as I can find on how Prabhupada wants leadership to run. Because it's so confusing. He's always saying, politicians, always two words. What are the two words? I know Vishal knows them. Fools and rascals? No, those are the Mayavadis, fools and rascals. Politicians, always two words. What do you say when your shoes aren't there? Rogues, thieves. You go to look for your shoes. Some rogue has stolen my shoes. Rogues and thieves. Politicians are always rogues and thieves. Every time. But then at the same time, he says we need Krishna conscious leaders. Okay, so I still need to get through two more verses. So we read this verse. Devotees should always think of Krishna within himself. The reason I'm bringing up all of this is way down the road. First, we have to purify ourselves of all the anartas. Then gradually, we're still in the sambandha stage. We're still trying to remember that we're not our bodies. We're still engaging, and at the same time engaging in some of the practices of abhideya. We come before the deity, we reveal our mind to the deity, we chant on our beads, we pray to Krishna, we pray to the holy name. So we're establishing, these are all practices. And once in a while we get a little taste of the last part, prayojana. Once in a while we feel like Krishna's speaking to us. But by practice, we come to what Prabhupada calls devotional service in ecstasy. So he translates sadhana bhakti as devotional service in practice, then bhava bhakti, which is the stage between sadhana and prema. Hi, Paul. Bhava bhakti where we have some feeling, but we're not completely purified. It's a middle platform. We're still practicing. It's really far along. The way Prabhupada introduces it in the Nectar of Devotion, you look up that chapter, the first couple of paragraphs are really encouraging. He says, by practicing the principles of bhakti yoga, one actually comes to the level of rising above the three modes of material nature. And just as when you are in an airplane flying above the clouds, you're always in the sunshine. Whatever the weather is down below does not affect you. You have succeeded in transcending the modes of nature. So it's not over there. You keep going, practicing from that point. And then that's when the relationship starts to develop. And we have a clear idea who we are going to be. Or we just feel a natural attraction toward one of the residents of Vrindavan. And here Prabhupada gives a little glimpse of it. He's usually very critical of anyone artificially jumping right in there. I was just listening on the ride over here. Prabhupada lecture came up on in our car, and he's in Vrindavan, and he said, these devotees sitting in Vrindavan in a secluded place chanting, they cannot even give up smoking bidis. So this is for someone on the liberated platform to try to engage in just Krishna Smaranam, always just thinking of Krishna. So this is really far along. We can look at it, and I also have Nectar, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu here. I was reading ahead and before this section, and there are some things that say, until you get there, you just offer obeisances to that kind of, to devotees that are on that platform. You offer obeisances to that mentality, to that emotion, to that purity. That's all we do. We just offer obeisances to it. We read about it once in a while. All right, so here we go. Here, Prabhupada, his translation to Canto 10, Chapter 9, Text 4. Well, in the purport, I'll start with the purport. It's a description of Mother Yashoda churning butter. Krishna is about to steal that butter. The whole situation is described, and Prabhupada writes in the purport, anyone who desires to be Krishna conscious in motherly affection or parental affection should contemplate the bodily features of Mother Yashoda. It is not that one should desire to become like Yashoda, for this is Mayavad. That was something else I read in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. They go into it. You don't desire to become Yashoda or Nanda Maharaj because that would be competition for them. And they are separate entities. You are you, they are them. You are serving them. You are going to become like them in some capacity. Okay, anyone who desires to be Krishna conscious in motherly affection or parental affection should contemplate the bodily features of Mother Yashoda. Either in parental affection or conjugal love, friendship or servitorship, in any way, we must follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Not try to become like them. Therefore, this description is provided here. Advanced devotees must cherish this description, always thinking of Mother Yashoda's features, how she was dressed, how she was working and perspiring, how beautifully the flowers were arranged in her hair, and so on. One should take advantage of the full description provided here by thinking of Mother Yashoda in maternal affection for Krishna. So here we go. I'll read the verse that he's referring to, and you could just think of someone thinking about her like that, unless you are there. but just to contemplate on the mood, on the idea that someone can be like this. Okay, translation. Dressed in a saffron yellow sari with a belt tied about her full hips, Mother Yashoda pulled on the churning rope, laboring considerably, her bangles and earrings moving and vibrating, and her whole body shaking. Because of her intense love for her child, her breasts were wet with milk. Her face, with its very beautiful eyebrows, was wet with perspiration, and Malati flowers were falling from her hair. While Mother Yashoda was churning butter, Lord Krishna, desiring to drink the milk of her breast, appeared before her, and in order to increase her transcendental pleasure, he caught hold of the churning rod and began to prevent her from churning. Mother Yashoda then embraced Krishna, allowing him to sit down on her lap, and began to look upon the face of the Lord with great love and affection. Because of her intense affection, milk was flowing from her breast. But when she saw that the milk pan on the oven was boiling over, she immediately left her son to take care of the overflowing milk, although the child was not yet fully satisfied with drinking the milk of his mother's breast. Prabhupada goes into the purport, examining her thought process. Everything in the household affairs of Mother Yashoda was meant for Krishna. Although Krishna was drinking the breast milk of Mother Yashoda, when she saw that the milk pan in the kitchen was overflowing, she had to take care of it immediately. And thus she left her son, who then became very angry, not having been fully satisfied with drinking the milk of her breast. Sometimes, one must take care of more than one item of important business for the same purpose. Therefore, Mother Yashoda was not unjust when she left her son to take care of the overflowing milk. On the platform of love and affection, it is the duty of the devotee to do one thing first and other things later. The proper intuition by which to do this is given by Krishna. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. Interesting how in the middle of this deep, super evolved relationship with Krishna, Prabhupada brings in Bhagavad Gita, tesham satata yuktanam, and then he gives this brief translation to it. In Krishna consciousness, everything is dynamic. Krishna guides the devotee in what to do first and what to do next on the platform of absolute truth. So he's giving practical things for us in this realm, and then he's seeing that going on even up there in this highest level of Mother Yashoda, who is not someone we can aspire to be. We could just try to be a servant, or as he says, don't even try to become like her. He's just so cautious. Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he makes it clear, don't try to become them. Prabhupada says, don't even try to become like them. Don't think you can become another Mother Yashoda. Just look at that feeling, observe that affection. So this is way at the end of Abhideya. Now the next chapter is going to be, next chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is going to be about prayojana, about what goes on once you've achieved the goal. It's not like it's over. That's where the story really begins. Okay, so I got two more verses here. Krishna has many types of devotees, text 161. Krishna has many types of devotees. Some are servants, some are friends, some are parents, and some are conjugal lovers. Those who are situated in one of these attitudes of spontaneous love according to their choice are considered to be on the path of spontaneous loving service. And then text 162 is a quotation from the third canto. My dear Mother Devahuti, O emblem of peace, my weapon, the disk of time,
never vanquishes those for whom I am very dear, for whom I am the Supersoul, the Son, Friend, Spiritual Master, Well-Wisher, Worshipable Deity, and Desired Goal. Since the devotees are always attached to me, they are never vanquished by the agents of time. And I was puzzling over, why is that verse here? What does that have to do with this topic? And what I see is, he mentions, my weapon never vanquishes those for whom I am very dear, for whom I am, and then he goes to this list of relationships, the super soul in the heart, which would be like Shantaras, the sun, so Vatsalya, friend, Sakyaras, spiritual master, what would that be, servitude, well-wisher, friendship again, worshipable deity, and desired goal. So devotees that have a relationship with Krishna, they've stepped beyond the influence of time. Krishna protects them. Okay, purport, this was spoken by Kapiladev to his mother Devahuti and is recorded in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. Kapiladev instructed his mother in Sankhya Yoga, but the importance of Bhakti Yoga is mentioned here. Later, Sankhya Yoga was imitated by atheists whose system was founded by a different Kapiladev, Rishi Kapiladev. And here we are. We got time for some questions. Yes. I'll read the verse to 160. The devotee should always think of Krishna within himself, and one should choose a very dear devotee who is a servitor of Krishna in Vrindavan. One should constantly engage in topics about that servitor and his loving relationship to Krishna, and one should live in Vrindavan. However, if one is physically unable to go to Vrindavan, he should mentally live there. All right.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for a beautiful class and nice explanations. I'm curious about, I often see two extremes and then a middle ground. One extreme being sahajism and going straight after those transcendental rasas in a way that makes them cheap. And the other extreme being kind of afraid of even wanting those relationships with Krishna and seems like stifling or closing the heart off to that natural desire that comes in the practice of Krishna consciousness. And so I'm curious about how do we, and you did speak on this during the class, I want to turn maybe a little more, how to allow that desire to flow naturally and cultivate that desire without taking it cheaply. Because that's why we're here. We're attracted to what this verse is talking about. We're attracted to one day realizing what is my relationship with Krishna. And maybe we are attracted to a certain resident of Vrindavan and we want to learn more about them. But then we hear things that make us feel like, I shouldn't even meditate on this resident of Vrindavan because that might be too far for me,
yeah,
too high for me. So how do we allow that and be safe?
How do we balance that? Yeah. And extremes, yeah. We've got one extreme of being so closed off from it and then one extreme of just jumping right in. Okay, I could have brought up that verse. I could dig it out on my phone, but the one about the essence of all advice. Anyone have that one memorized?
To utilize 24 hours.
The essence of all advice is that one should carefully utilize all of his time, 24 hours a day, in hearing, chanting, remembering, and discussing the instructions and the pastimes of Krishna. Tishtan Braje, and then one should live in Braj, Vrindavan, either physically or mentally, and then choose an associate. So in the purport to that, Prabhupada brings in this new terminology that I don't see anywhere else. He says the beginning stage is One is Shravanadas. Does anyone have, can someone dig that up? Get that Nectar of Instruction, text 8. Shravanadas. And so he says, that means you just hear a lot. And so that's what we should do. Just go on hearing. Just keep on reading. And Prabhupada has given us so many books. It takes us, we read about an hour and a half every day. And it took about 5 years to get through all of the books that he's written. And I think there may still be a few more that we haven't touched on. And Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, it's got to be in there. That's an amazing book. There's a lot in there. He just clarified so much. Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, whole Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita again and again and again, over and over again. Nectar of Devotion, just going through that. I mean, he wrote the Nectar of Devotion. He wants us to read that. He wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita, wants us to read that. But then when the devotees got too involved in reading certain sections of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and meditating on that and saying, they're immediately jumping to this. No, you're not quite ready. He was furious about it. Oh, you found it, okay. Yeah, bring it over, thanks for the question. Maybe it'll bring some clarity here. I always like to just, there's so much in Prabhupada's books. And when you read other books, then it helps you to understand some of the things that he's already said in here. But if you spend too much time reading these other books, then you start to think, oh, Prabhupada just says the same things over and over again. It's 80%, 20%. That's a safe ratio. 80% Prabhupada's books, core and explore. 80% core, and then 20% exploring other books. let's see. Where is that? Here we go. In the neophyte stage, okay, it's in quotation marks. He's quoting somebody. I think it's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has commented as follows upon this verse. One who has not yet developed interest in Krishna consciousness should give up all material motives and train his mind by following the progressive regulative principles, namely chanting and remembering Krishna and his name, form, quality, pastimes, and so forth. In this way, after developing a taste for such things, one should try to live in Vrindavan and pass his time constantly remembering Krishna's name, famed pastimes, and qualities under the direction and protection of an expert devotee. This is the sum and substance of all instruction regarding the cultivation of devotional service. So the first stage is devotional service in practice, which has two parts. First is in practice, and then you start to get an affection for the practice itself. You start to love reading, chanting, you love your japa beads, you love everything about it. and then you start coming into the other stages. In the neophyte stage, still Bhaktisiddhanta's quotation, in the neophyte stage, one should always engage in hearing Krishna katha. This is called Shravana Dasha. Dasha, the stage of hearing. Not das, but dasha. Dasha, doesn't that mean 10? Which is 10 and which is servant?
Dasha means situation.
Dasha, situation, thank you.
And das means 10.
Das. Okay. And what? And das with a line over it is?
Das is
okay. Thank you. Oh boy, three words, it sounds so similar. Everyone got that? Shravana Dasha, the stage of hearing. By constantly hearing the transcendental holy name of Krishna and hearing of his transcendental form, qualities, and pastimes, one can attain to the stage of acceptance called Varana Dasha. What does Varana mean? Anybody know? Accept. Thank you. The stage of accepting. Uh-huh. Okay, I'll read that again. Let's see. By constantly hearing about Krishna, one can attain to the stage of acceptance called Varana Dasha. When one attains this stage, he becomes attached to the hearing of Krishna Katha. So that's, we're still in sadhana bhakti, but we become attached to sadhana bhakti. When one is able to chant in ecstasy, he attains the stage of smarana vashta. Smarana vashta, the stage of remembering, recollection, absorption, meditation, constant remembrance, and trance are the five items of progressive Krishna Smaranam. Okay, we got it up on the, thank you. Recollection, absorption, meditation, constant remembrance, and trance are the five items of progressive Krishna Smaranam. When you space out and you're not doing anything, you don't have any engagement, wherever your mind goes, if you find your mind going to Krishna, then yeah, we're making progress. That's what we're working on. We're trying to make that deep impression. And here he talks about that. At first, remembrance of Krishna may be interrupted at intervals, but later, remembrance proceeds uninterrupted. Just like sometimes we're trying to think of Krishna, and then some other thought comes in and we're wondering, like, where did that come from? So in this later stage, we're trying to do some task, some material task, then all of a sudden we find ourselves thinking about Mother Yashoda, churning butter, looking at the face of Krishna with affection, and like, wait, what am I doing? Oh yeah, I gotta get back to what I'm doing here. That's the later stage. At first, remembrance of Krishna may be interrupted at intervals, but later remembrance proceeds uninterrupted. When remembrance is uninterrupted, it becomes concentrated and is called meditation. When meditation expands and becomes constant, it is called anusmriti. By uninterrupted and unceasing anusmriti, one enters the stage of samadhi, or spiritual trance. After smarana dasha, or samadhi, has fully developed, the soul comes to understand his original constitutional position. And that is, we're right on the cusp of that here in this section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where you're starting to get an idea what you're attracted to. You put yourself under the shelter of some devotee. In the Bhakti-rasamrita Sindhu, it says, put yourself under one of the cowherd boys, under Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, and you're always thinking of them. So that's after all of these other things, when your meditation and remembrance is uninterrupted. So it's premature to try to do something like that beforehand. We may like the idea of Krishna and Balaram playing in the forest, but we're not quite there yet to say, that's me. That's where I'm going to be. After smarana dasha, or samadhi, has fully developed, the soul comes to understand his original constitutional position. At that time, he can perfectly and clearly understand his eternal relationship with Krishna. That is called Sampatti Dasha, perfection of life. There you go. There's your answer. Just keep reading Prabhupada's books. Everything's in there. It's amazing how much he's put in there. Yes?
Hare Krishna. I had a thought that I wanted to share because I feel, I'm not sure if it's, actually, Prabhu, you just said it, but I just thought of it in a different way. I thought I'd share. Because we are at an earlier stage of Krishna consciousness, it is not that we shouldn't be hearing Krishna's pastimes, forms, glories. As it clearly says in this verse, we should be listening to them. But we cannot assume, and it's very easy to assume that we're all in a sudden on a higher level than we actually are. And we can assume that just because I'm attracted to hearing this pastime, that it must mean I know my, you know, like eternal, it's transcendental body. Like, we're not there yet, but we are allowed to have an attraction towards them. But all the while just knowing and being humble that we're actually not there yet, we're just still studying or learning. And I feel like that comes from reading Prabhupada's books. Shivaram Maharaj was my first Shiksha Guru. Even after I'd take initiation, I always ask him, can I read your books? Because he talks about Krishna's transcendental pastimes in very great detail. And he always tells me, like, if you read Srila Prabhupada's books, then yes, you can read my books, but they're secondary. We should always remember you're not we're not even qualified to call ourselves the dasis of the gopis. We're the servants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Gauranitai. So he's always like just hammering that. He's saying, and I kind of eventually got it that we can't assume stuff that we don't know. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for that. Good point. And I just found one more thing that we came across in a regular reading. Yeah, just stay in Prabhupada's books. There's so much in here. In the seventh canto, chapter 10, after everything about Prahlad, there's this verse that says, by devotional service, so this is what the whole thing started with. The seventh canto starts with the story of Shishupal being killed. Everyone saw his soul coming out, merging into Krishna's body. Yudhishthira asks, what was that all about? How come he got to go there? So 10 chapters later, Narada Muni says, by devotional service, pure devotees who incessantly think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead receive bodies similar to his. This is known as Sarupya Mukti. Although Shishupal, Dantavakra, and other kings thought of Krishna as an enemy, they also achieved the same result. Purport, and then this is interesting. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in connection with Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami, it is explained that a devotee should externally execute his routine devotional service in a regular way, but should always inwardly think of the particular mellow in which he is attracted to the service of the Lord. So how did that come up just a few days before I read this verse? There it is. Prabhupada's cross-referencing today's verse. This constant thought of the Lord makes the devotee eligible to return home back to Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Chaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti. After giving up his body, the devotee does not again receive a material body, but goes back to Godhead and receives a spiritual body resembling those of the Lord's eternal associates, whose activities he followed. However the devotee likes to serve the Lord, he may constantly think of the Lord's associates, the cowherd boys, the gopis, the Lord's father and mother, his servants, and the trees, land, animals, plants, and water in the Lord's abode. Because of constantly thinking of these features, one acquires a transcendental position. So there it's like he's giving permission, go ahead and think of it, while at the same time externally execute his routine devotional service in a regular way, but should inwardly think of the particular mellow in which he is attracted to the service of the Lord. So that's also, that's like a very private thing. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that if one has some deep feeling for some particular aspect of Krishna, if one feels connected to Krishna, you should hide that. Don't wave it around. Don't tell other people about it. He said, and he gives a really unusual example of how careful you should be with it. He says, you should hide it as if you found out that your mother was going off with another man. Which, in other cultures, that's not a very good thing. Even in America, it's not as bad, but in India, that would be like worse than death. Okay, anything else? I think we'll conclude. Satya Madhava, Hare Krishna.
So in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Prabhupada wrote the summary study of nectar devotion, but Rupa Goswami talks about how Krishna awards pure devotional service, and only he can award pure devotional service, and if to be recommended for this pure devotional service to Krishna, the Radharani sometimes will go to Krishna and he's ready, or he'll, I don't know how she's going to say it to him, but she'll recommend pure devotional service. And then Krishna awards the pure devotional service on his own. Nobody can award pure devotional service except Krishna. And this is Rupa Goswami. To me, that's the greatest stage of devotional service, and that you can attain in this self same body. But how can we attain that state? And you need someone to usually recommend. Krishna sometimes awards, just out of his own will, but how can you? There's other things that are empowered when Krishna awards devotional service, pure devotional service, and they'll be apparent in a person, who has been empowered with pure devotional service. So how can we tell a person who's been awarded pure devotional service?
Okay, thank you for that. And you said the phrase pure devotional service at least 12 or 15 times. I like that. And Prabhupada, that's Prabhupada's phrase he uses so often in the nectar devotion. When I was taking notes, I just started putting PDS. PDS, just because he used it so much, pure devotional service. And it is such a powerful phrase. And how do we get it? We need to be recommended by someone. How do we recognize someone who is on that stage? And then here's a little joke. I'm going to just put it in here because we're past time already. But if someone is in Vatsalya Ras, they will be apparent. So how to recognize someone? Yeah, that is a thing, especially if everyone is trying really hard to keep it within. But even if we do find someone, are we ready? Meanwhile, in the meantime, just practice everything, study,
this chapter and the chapter before it, Lord Chaitanya is explaining everything to Sanatan Goswami, how to get there. And Pundarik, he's...
Can I say?
Yeah, please.
What I remember is that one time a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, how do we find a resident of Vrindavan to follow? And Srila Prabhupada said, I'm that resident of Vrindavan, you follow me. And Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to, because I spent some time in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada wanted to preach till the end of his life. And that was also confirmed the other day. They had beautiful story of Radha Kund, her experience of how Srila Prabhupada took her in a dream to the depths of Radha Kund and said, this is where my book distribution is going on. So this is our legacy, I think. It came to also my mind, there's one nice verse in Navadvipa Mahatmya near the end. Nityananda Prabhu is telling Jiva Goswami that Dasya Ras in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes gives you the Madhurya Ras in Krishna's pastimes. So we're servants of our spiritual master, our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada. He wanted preaching going on. This is our legacy, I think, that we should follow, and this will give us everything. That's my humble understanding.
I like that statement, Dasya Ras in Lord Chaitanya's movement. Where was that from?
I'll find that out for you, because I want to do for myself. I mean,
that's a good one. I can
relate
to that.
One of the later chapters of Navadvipa Mahatmya.
Yeah, so there you go, Satya Madhava. Just somehow serve Lord Chaitanya's movement, serve Prabhupada, and then everything's going to be given to us when we're ready for it. And yeah, it will be apparent. You use that word too. It will be apparent, especially in Vatsalya Ras. It'll be apparent. I think only half the devotees got that one. It didn't quite have the impact I expected. What's that? No, that's not it. That's different. Okay. But that, yeah, I guess that is related. It's a dad joke. All right. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.